Welcome back. My name is Keith. I'm here with Russian Danny.
What's up?
Mike Fiella.
Hey.
And Charlie. Charles in charge.
Charles in charge. What do we got today?
Man, we got some good ones.
Got some interesting, a little mother-son.
Yeah. Mike Marcus and his mom. Mother and son crime team. A lot of getting loaded in L.A. in the 80s, 70s and 80s.
Yeah. What, you know, that's what keeps family together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Cocaine can be the glue that keeps the family together.
How was everybody's week this week?
Mine was fine.
Yeah.
My life's always been better since I haven't been doing drugs and shit and drinking.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah.
But we went to Balboa Island for the 4th. And then our friend Jody was going down there and he's like, hey, I'm going to a party at this actor's house across the water. Like literally, we're on Balboa Island. I typed the address in. It was directly across the bay. I could see the party. So we take the fucking golf cart and get on the ferry and go over there. And then we're there. So this is, you know, July 4th of 2019. And we're there on the Newport Peninsula where dude lives. You know, so his house sits on the peninsula, but across the street's the beach. You know, the other house on the beach. And I was there and like we're driving. I was like, fuck, I got arrested here 30 years ago for hurling, throwing a water balloon, which I didn't do. It's the one arrest I have that I was innocent. And the cops knew I was innocent. They told the girls they were arrested next door. Let's arrest that asshole with the mohawk.
Wow.
Well, and you had a mohawk?
I've had several mohawks, yeah.
That's amazing.
You never had a mohawk, Mike?
I never did have a mohawk. No, I never had a mohawk.
There was never a mohawk in the Brooks Brothers catalog.
I had hair, you know, and it sometimes had a playful way about it. I wasn't afraid to, you know, I was less mohawk and a little bit more, I don't know, just, that was a long time ago. But it's all right. Sue, I'm going to get that done. I think it's time to get, I think they have the technology at a place now where a full head of hair.
No, don't get that. Just get a hair transplant in a mohawk.
Yeah.
No, I've always said if it was something I was going to do, if I was going to do something about it, it's got to be just a wig. It's the only way to go is a man's wig. I think at the end of the day, because then you have the both, you get the benefit of the reveal at various points. And I've always loved the idea that you can, if you wear a wig and you just don't say anything about it to anyone, that you can kind of hold anyone hostage with that.
Oh yeah.
Cause it's just like, what, you going to say something about it?
Yeah.
Is the correct term a system?
A system. Yeah.
Buddy Cianci had a system, right?
Buddy had a spectacular system. He had a 3-season system where he had a short wig, a long wig, and a medium wig.
That's amazing.
For different times of year. Yeah, and they were all human hair. They were the real deal.
For those that don't know, what's your relationship?
Oh, Buddy Cianci was my old boss back in the early 90s when I worked in politics with a bunch of nice men. who ran a good, clean city. And Danny, you were saying, now what, four years?
Yeah, I've been off the shit for 4 years.
Nice.
Yeah. Happy birthday, my man.
Yeah, happy birthday.
It's a trip. It's a fucking trip.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Well, I guess we should get into it. Let's hear a little bit about this family, this incredible family duo.
Here we go.
Look at me. Yeah. None of those.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, yeah. But they did find a couple of headless Federales outside your cab.
Oh, so my cab, Delmore.
Oh, Delmore. Right down the street.
They were involved.
It was like
in
fucking
drug.
A quarter mile down the road.
They were involved with the mob and they didn't pay.
Oh, so they deserved to get their heads cut off. You're absolutely right.
Rules are rules.
Hey, I don't think, yeah.
Hey, my name's Keith. I'm here with Russian Danny.
Hey.
Mary.
Hi.
Mike Marcus.
Hello.
Mike Fiella.
Hi.
And our son, Charlie.
That's great. Anyway, as I was saying. No, so that he would take enough that he'd pass out. At least if he would pass out, for a little while he wouldn't be smoking. That didn't work at all.
Yeah. It's amazing that didn't work.
So there was a place.
Wait, but we need some background. We got to
have
some background.
Oh, sure. Go ahead, please.
Just to give this some context, because it's so incredible, and I don't want to talk over anybody, but it blows my mind. You were a nurse.
Registered nurse. Many years.
Registered nurse. How long?
40 years.
40 years.
Yep.
Okay. That's amazing. My mom's a registered nurse, and it's I know how crazily, how much dedication it takes, how much hard work. Mm. That blows my mind that you were also a registered nurse through all this. And you are her son.
Yes. It's just me and her left in the immediate family, actually.
Got it.
Well, some of the stories I'm telling, I wasn't sober. I certainly wasn't sober for that story.
But she was working still at Sears.
Yeah.
No,
you were a visiting nurse then.
But most of my career, I was sober. I mean, I'm not bragging. It just happened to work. When I got so bad, I stopped working. I could see I shouldn't keep working, so I stopped working.
Oh, that's right.
I was living with a drug dealer, so money was no problem.
Dude, that guy.
Bless up.
Do you remember Lodes, Keith? You're probably pretty young. Oh, you do remember Lodes.
I remember people taking them. I didn't ever take them.
So it was Dordan and codeine, which is like Instanaud. What Lodes did, it was Dordan, which was America's favorite sleeping pill after Quaaludes.
Oh.
And codeine threes, right, Mom?
Mm-hmm.
Tylenol codeine threes?
Yep.
And you would take three Tylenol codeines and two Lodes, and it was exactly like shooting dope.
Yep.
Just like the nod would start. I remember I had a scab on my nose from how much I used to just be rubbing my nose. And he had all this shit at the house and all these hiding places. And they would go to like San Francisco or Vegas. Dude, it was like Disneyland at that house. I would just rip that house apart and find everything. Stuff that he didn't even know he stashed. And just be at Oakwood Gardens with all those insane people getting loaded. And I was 16 at the time.
Did that guy use drugs? Mary's boyfriend? No, he just sold them. Just a business thing, right?
He started in porno.
Oh.
He was selling Super 8 films. Mom used to go with him to Vegas and stuff and sell the... Before VHS, all that. Like, it was crazy.
He would sell the old Super 8 film pornos where people would project them in their house. Right,
exactly.
For like stag parties.
And he was friends with all those guys. Swedish Erotica.
What a horrible age to be alive.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. How frustrated with that. I get so bent out of shape when it's just like, go back 30 seconds. I got to see that again. So demonic.
But wait a minute. So he had... So he had these, and I'm 16, and I'm fucking, you know, out of my mind, like horny, dry. He had these Super 8 films and this handheld projector.
Oh, my God.
So you would put one, you know, put one reel here or one core of the film here, and it would go through the handheld projector. So you're trying to, like, hold this thing and jerk off at the same time. And it always fell off, like, right when you got to that place. And it was this plastic handheld. Dude, that was rough. Before VHS, it was rough times.
Oh, God.
Okay, I just want to interject a little something. Okay, after I got sober, Danny was still selling drugs. This makes no sense. I was sober, still living with a drug dealer because the money was so cool. So, no, I mean, it's
and she was working at ASAP.
Working at ASAP.
That's amazing.
Working in a recovery house. Anyway,
you were working at a recovery
house?
At
a rehab. Not a recovery
living
house.
Living with a drug dealer.
A rehab. One of the only rehabs in LA.
What kind
at the
of car
time.
Did he drive?
Oh, very low key.
Oh, dude, he was super low key.
Very low key. Really?
Yeah.
What small kind of car heads. Did you drive?
A lot of different ones.
You had. Yeah. You had a badass Buick Regal, I remember. You had.
No,
a,
I used to. I also had a great Camaro.
You had a Camaro with the T-tops. She was more into the cars.
So he was more low key.
Oh, dude.
And did he stay out? Did he do all right in the end?
He stayed out. He never went to prison. He never went to jail.
Low key. Low
he
and
never
slow.
Went to jail. And he was making, at his peak, he was making about 50 grand a month.
Okay, but let me, that's beautiful. What I want to talk Sorry. About, the money. Oh, no, that's fine. anyway, this particular house we lived in, he had one of his friends who was a woodworker install a safe. And we used to go through the safe once a week, putting in money, counting how much. So we went through one day and counted, and there's so much missing. And we looked at one another and said, Michael.
Dude,
I mean, I wasn't taking the money. He knew he wasn't taking the money. The only other person was sitting on my left.
170 grand in you stacks. Too. I didn't take 170, but I definitely took about 30 or 40.
Yeah, easily.
That's
yeah.
I would just take from each pile, which was really stupid. Because if I would have just taken a stack at a time, they would have been like, oh, maybe that didn't. And then there was always 10 grand under the carpets. Dude, it was just crazy. It was like Disneyland for a drug addict. Between like all the money, the Quaaludes, the second all, the coke, it was insane. They would go to Vegas. I'm like, oh, I'll watch the house because I was allegedly sober. And they would go to Vegas and I would just go on these fucking tears, man, like near death tears of smoking and eating Quaaludes and snorting Dilaudid.
So he sold everything?
Yeah. Yeah. He was pretty all. Yeah. Full service.
He was the kind of dealer that made a lot of money because he didn't use anything. He didn't use coke. Once in a while, Quaalude because it made sex cool.
But yeah.
No, he did. I'm sure you heard that.
He did push that, yeah.
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 No, but he didn't use drugs. So if you don't use drugs and you're a dealer, you can make a lot of money. A lot of money.
She knows.
I saw it.
That could have never been me. The first bag of pot that I ever like got to sell, it was gone before I ever sold it. And I had already been at the supermarket to get a bag of oregano.
Right.
And just see what bodily fluids I could put on that to make it like marijuana.
Right. Something crystalline.
All right, this is not going to be my future.
Right.
Yeah, no.
Hey, that's real smelly pot, man. Yeah, it must be good.
It's dank.
It's like a monkey selling bananas, right? It's like, it's just not going to happen.
Not going to fucking happen,
that's
no.
Great. Bodily fluids.
Just whatever.
It's great. Okay, so one Saturday afternoon, we were hanging around just Saturday afternoon, and all of a sudden, there was a huge crash. These two big, big dudes with guns.
Fucking AK. Make believe
those doors are solid wood, not glass. They had on combat boots. They put it right through the door. The neighbors never heard. Oh, anyway, okay. They were there for the drugs and the money. One of them had a girlfriend who'd been by to buy Quaaludes the beginning of the week, and she told him, there's this old guy, plenty of money, plenty of drugs, breaking his house. He'll fold like a bad beach chair. And anyway, he didn't fold. He was a real rough, tough old Bronx Jew. Anyway, they actually had him on the floor with a dish towel around his neck doing this because they wanted to know where the money and the drugs were. And he said some very interesting things to them, and none of them were the answer they wanted. And then they said they would beat
like,
me up.
Like, fuck you, you motherfucking right. Cocksuckers.
They said they would beat me up if he didn't, so he turned over the money. And I'm just saying, home invasions was just part of this wonderful story. I was sober. Can you believe it? I was sober, and I kept living with him because money was so good.
And we were going in and out of rehabs, me and my sister. So she was paying for our rehabs, probably out of the guilt of like, all right, they're getting loaded, but I'm living with a drug dealer.
And I can pay for them. I'll take care of it. Jails, institutions, death. We were all headed, all of us.
So that was a lot. It was like a kilo of coke. It was like, Danny told me it was like 75,000. They didn't find the pills though, which he was happy about. No. So there was these pills called Toqualone, which was Danny's friend in Amsterdam, Kurt, remember Kurt? Was Sweden.
Switzerland.
So they started making Quaaludes in Switzerland. And Danny would send this guy, Kurt, like an ounce of coke at a time, but ground up in an envelope. And it, like, he would just put it in plain package writing with no return address. And, and Kurt would send him these Quaaludes. And Danny was buying the coke, like, you know, 10 bucks a gram for nothing and cutting it. And he was getting this Quaaludes from Kurt that he was selling for 50 bucks each because there was no Quaaludes anywhere.
One tablet. I remember that.
Jeez. And he had a fucking Nike duffel bag filled with them. It was so crazy. It was so insane. I can't believe I didn't die in that. It was 5848 Hazeltine. You know that area, right? Right above Calvert.
When Danny didn't have coke, I would just drive down to Calvert. Calvert Street by the cop shop.
Yeah.
You know where it is.
Yeah. So what was it? What was the first time that you partied? What was the first time that you were like, oh, this might be for me?
Right. I always drank. And then when I met him, his roommate was a coke dealer.
But go back to Sig. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. We'll do that in a minute. Okay. This coke dealer was using his product like crazy.
Chuck.
He was chopping it all up one day and it fell on the floor into the carpeting. So my boyfriend called me and said, get up here as fast as possible. I got a surprise for you. It was shag carpeting. There was at least a half a pound of coke. And I was down there on the floor with a straw going through the shag carpeting. It was on.
This guy was so high level, Keith. He was frightening.
That lasted me at least 4 or 5 weekends. Just
just going around the carpet.
Remember that with the shag carpet?
Yeah, oh, I remember. It was still there when we came up to visit.
How much in the shag?
I don't think it was a pound.
A quarter a pound.
Oh, probably. Jesus.
Really? Was it that? Oh, yeah, it was.
So you were just coming back and be like, you know, might I hit that carpet real quick?
Actually, it was incredible in there for a long time because my sister ended up getting most of it out of the carpet. That's right.
And you said that he was a...
Chuck was a really high-level coke dealer. And this is when coke was like, it was so
what
good.
What year are you talking?
I'm talking about 78, 79.
You're talking about real.
When it was 60 grand a key.
You're talking
fucking,
about real fucking cocaine.
Yeah, like 90%, 80%.
No, the kind of cocaine where it was just like, this is the best idea. What do you mean? I'm successful,
so clean,
I'm rich,
good.
But I should feel like I'm going to live forever.
Right.
That's
like,
exactly.
I've only, unfortunately, you know, like I came along at a period where it was in the 80s. I would say I had that kind of coke that I could afford that kind of coke.
Right.
Maybe a couple of handfuls of times, you know, but it is just, and it does, I don't think it, I mean.
I don't think it exists.
You know, they take away your keys for that when they give you blood pressure medication.
You're just gonna have to maybe slow it. Just,
that's great.
Yeah, but
that's great.
But at the end of the day, I from everything I've heard from the kids out there, it doesn't exist really.
No, it doesn't.
Now they're paying still. They're paying $100 a gram now. But it doesn't exist. And that was like, I remember when it went away and it was $50 a gram.
Yeah.
For shit coke. And it's
transferred to Mexico.
It's half the price.
Right.
You know?
It was that turpentine wash.
And now it's like the same price, but still shit.
Yeah. Although I read something on Vice where there's like good, sustainable, like handcrafted coke that they're making and they're like really concerned.
Artisanal coke.
Like
we
beer.
Want to do the right thing.
Lydia Bastanich presents cocaine.
The real deal.
Have it with your Stella Artois.
From farm to mirror.
Farm to mirror.
From farm to pipe.
Yeah.
That's great.
You can trace our coke right to the Peruvian farmer. Yeah.
There was only one guy.
Hello.
In the 80s and like 85, because me and Mike are about the same age, but I remember like when I was like 15 or something, one guy, and he's probably like that Chuck guy, a guy who had a lot of cocaine in West Covina, and he had really great coke. Like it didn't taste like chemicals or anything.
No.
But I remember I did it and it was like, and I'm not even kidding you, the next time, which is probably the next day, I called him, and when he answered the phone and said, come on over, then I had to take a shit. I didn't even have to get the coke.
Wow.
I was on my way there.
That's how quickly that happens.
Yeah.
When the face goes numb. The first time I'd ever done it, I seriously, it was like the guys who brought it over to this basement apartment in Manhattan in like 1986 were seriously out of Scarface. Like it was fucking confounding.
That
they
was
were
the
Colombian
real shit.
Drug dealers.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was like, I was like, oh, what's happening? Like what's, and this is my first real coke deal, you know? And I'm like, I don't know if this is really good. This is a good idea. You know, like this has seemed to have escalated really fucking quickly. Like we're hanging out with this dude. You're a busboy. You work with my buddy at Amsterdam's. If you guys are at Amsterdam's, it's cool. You got a busboy and a waiter and we're hanging out. And a couple of us are in college and you're a DJ and everything's cool. And then all of a sudden fucking, you know, it looks like things have really escalated.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But that was the face numbing, the one where I literally leaned over to my friend Liam at the time and I was like, I can't feel my face.
That's a real shit.
He was like, no, that's you're fine.
I think putting
but also shut up because you're just talking.
Right. I think putting like smoking that kind of coke at 15 years old for me put literally put a blueprint on my endorphins that will never get erased. Like, because at that developmental age, and I had already been doing Quaaludes and Valium, and like I said, she was working at Cedar, so she was bringing home Speed, Black Beauties, which we'd open the capsules.
Not, but not from the hospital, from the dealer by the hospital. I didn't get those from Cedars.
Oh, there was a dealer by Cedars?
Yes.
So you'd stop there on the way to work?
Of course. Didn't everybody?
But, yes.
Well, was that a thing? Were a lot of nurses that you were working with? Were there a lot of partying?
What? I know there was a lot of drinking. I mean, nobody
kept
ever,
it on the DL.
Nobody ever spoke about the drugs. But, we used to go, we got off duty, we'd go to the bars. Oh, yeah, nurses used to drink a lot. Maybe they still do. I don't know.
And what kind of nursing did you do?
Then I was working on oncology at Cedars.
Oh, geez. All right. Yeah. That's
you needed, right. You needed all the drinks you could get.
No.
Oh, man. Did you ever do ER?
No.
Okay. But oncology, yeah, that's not a PIP.
That's not exactly. But she was working as a visiting nurse for years. She's to take you took care of Lloyd Bridges. You worked on the set of Happy Days. She had some pretty amazing gigs.
Mm. Oh wow!
You know, that's where you go to people's houses just for a visit and then go on to.
They used to do that back in the day. So.
I'm sure they still do it. Yeah, people that aren't sick enough to be in the hospital, but that need some sort of care during the
day, home hospice.
Right. Yeah, like CNAs.
Yeah, check their meds, see if they're okay, see that they aren't on the floor with a broken hip, because they're most of them are older people and they're living alone.
But you'd be lit up and high or drunk when you went and visited these people? Or not too much, right?
Not drunk. Definitely a little coke helped that situation.
Coke. But you also like Speed because you used to get those things called Fastine and Dizoxin that were really good Speed. Dude, pharmaceutical Speed, I'm sorry, that is the fucking shit back then.
That Dizoxin.
That was the coke,
joke.
The good coke of our day was
that
also
that Dizoxin's like fighter pilot shit.
Oh boy. Oh, you know Dizoxin, huh? Little tiny
my
yellow
hair
pill.
Fucking itches just
so
thinking about
little,
it.
So little, but so powerful.
Yeah. Keith knows a lot about Speed.
I know a lot about Speed. But you know what? It's funny what your mom was saying. It's weird, like, because you've been retired for a while. But I had a guy I got sober with. His office was at Cedars, and he was a doctor. And through him, I met, like, a dentist, another doctor, and, like, four nurses. They were all on the program when I met him. But they all were in this. It's so rampant between doctors and nurses, this drug shit, that they have like, it's not a 12-step meeting, but it's like literally a meeting you have to go to. You're on like a probation.
Right. That's right. The state makes you do it.
Yeah.
Once your urine is dirty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my friend, I'll leave him nameless, but he had gotten popped. You know, he was like, he was doing a morphine and stuff. So he got popped. So he got on that thing you're talking about, the state thing. And then he was like, shit. So he had his patients. He would, one or two of them, he was telling him, listen, I need you to don't take any pain meds the next few days because I'm doing some tests and all this. And he had built a rig that was a bladder under his arm.
Oh, my God.
And that had a hose that went down his back and up his crotch onto his penis.
And he wasn't the only one. Yeah. Everybody was doing that.
Yeah.
That's always nice.
Yeah, because you couldn't
have
a dirty.
That's good to know.
A
doctor, we need you in surgery. I'll be right there.
No, you couldn't have a dirty urine. Also, they used to pay people to use their urine. There was a million ways of getting around that.
Yeah.
And that were they testing nurses regularly?
Only if they, you know, only if you were a drug addict.
I think it was as bad then with them really, like, now it's, there's no way to get away from it.
No.
They, like, really
anesthesiologists.
Plus every pill is accounted for.
Anesthesiologists, dentists.
One of the guys I know from my friend is an anesthesiologist.
Yeah, dude, those dudes party.
Dentists have the highest suicide rate.
Is that true?
Yeah. I was just a sober companion to one about 2 years ago. Never. That's the third and the last time I'll ever do sober companioning. Fucking nightmare, dude.
Is it?
And he was like a cosmetic dentist to the stars.
Oh, shit.
And just, I was stuck in a house with this guy for 10 days in Beverly Hills while whores and coke came in. And there was fucking nothing I could do. They're just like, well, just make sure he doesn't die. And I'm like, how? He's locked in the room with a fucking 3 ounces.
And
kick
you have
the door
to
down.
Wait, so you—that's part of the thing of like you're like, oh, you have to be present for that.
You have to be present. I mean, they're good paying jobs, but they're not that good. I made $1,100 a day to do that, but it.
Whoa!
But that's for a 24-hour period, and you're not sleeping that well,
right?
And you're in fucking fear that this guy's gonna die on your watch.
Yeah.
So like after 10 days, you're like, oh fuck, I don't care if I made whatever $11,000. I gotta get the fuck out of here. Like, it's crazy. It's a crazy gig. I wouldn't do it again. I think I would do short term, maybe an hour or two here and there.
I'd be like one of those guys. It's just be like, all right, let's get it out. I'm going to party for like 10 or 11. Yeah. I'm going to make 10 grand.
Well, because you're not even a real addict, so you could kind of watch them and party with them, but make sure they don't die.
Yeah.
If Mike starts partying with them, it's going to go really
done. Yeah, it's
done. Really bad.
We're getting on a plane and going to Lolita Island.
Because correct. You know what's weird is like.
Oh, no.
The funny thing about Mike is.
Epstein.
For being our age, Mike was way more of a freebaser than a crack smoker. When you read his book, you'll
yeah, see. It was like, definitely more. And that's a big difference, by the way.
I've never smoked crack. I've only freebased, and I did it all night one night, and it was so stressful. The next morning, I'm literally like, I'm never doing that again.
Wow, really?
Oh, I was terrified.
But then
it.
You smoke speed, which is totally different.
I didn't smoke speed. I snorted it, and I do hot rails and shit.
Okay.
But I didn't smoke the speed because I was so fucking terrified. Like, because, you know, you freebase, you take a hit. Michael does this. I pass the pipe to Mike, and then Mike starts talking to Mike Marcus here. It's like, hey, and all I'm just sitting there going like, I wish Mike would shut the fuck up and pass that pipe. God damn it. Then he hands it to Mike Marcus, and I'm like, and Mike starts talking.
Is this ever
going
to come back to me?
Man, I fucking hate Mike Marcus. Yeah, like.
Your right speed is different like that in the sense that the euphoric punch lasts a lot longer.
Yeah.
Like, it is definitely much more sustaining.
Well, but then it becomes like the no man's land of awake. Where you're just awake and you can't even hit the receptors or the endorphins anymore, but you have no choice but to, you know, stay up and do 10 different unfinished projects.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like line up the spices in alphabetical order.
Right, exactly.
That's the kind of thing that housewives do.
That's amazing.
Housewives, that's your jibe. You were pretty organized.
Yeah, who wouldn't be? Yeah, no. Housewives that did coke had the cleanest houses in town.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. With all the spices lined up alphabetically. That's so crazy.
That's
right.
Amazing.
So what, of all the drugs you've ever done, what are your favorite? What's your favorite?
Always speed. Always
with speed.
Always up. I never did heroin. I did Quaaludes because they were cool for sex. I never did heroin. No.
Yeah, Percodan and all those opioids weren't your thing. That's right.
No.
I'm with Mary.
Oh, I just want to tell a 12-step story, and I shouldn't, but I will. Oh, when I got sober a long time ago, thank you, God, I've been sober forever.
How long, Mom?
34 years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, shit. Wow.
Of what? That's what somebody said. Of what? No, they didn't say that.
They didn't say that.
What do you have, Danny? Six?
No, I got four yesterday.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's a fucking big deal.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you.
Every day is a big deal.
Yes, every day. Absolutely.
8 years.
8 years?
Get in touch with us when you have five and we'll come to you. Yeah, when he has five, we'll go to his party.
Yeah, I have a big party. Throw it right up here.
When you get the nickel, that's fabulous. When you get the nickel. No, it is. It is. Five is a biggie.
Street language, yeah.
Anyway, I was at a really big meeting, at least 70 or 80 people, and this was probably the late 80s. A young guy was telling his story, and he said something about Percodan, and everybody in the audience went,
Percodan were really big, and then Vicodin came in. That's right.
Yeah,
Percodan,
that time,
and Percocet.
All about
Percodan and Percocet. Yeah.
Jerry Lewis, he was a big Percodan guy, right?
Are they the same things? Percodan and Percocet?
One's, Percocet's one's aspirin and one's ibuprofen. Tylenol.
Oh, really?
We know our shit.
Yeah, that's the only difference. No, but I couldn't get over everybody in the audience. A bunch of sober people, but all those Percodan stories came back to everybody.
Did you ever do Percodans?
Oh, like? I loved opiates. And here was my stack when I woke up in the morning because I was a day trader and dealing drugs. My mom was actually my crimey when I was dealing drugs between 99 and 2003.
What's a crimey?
Just helping me and selling pills, and she would get prescriptions.
Crime partner, yeah.
We had this doctor, Dr. Lieberman on Alvarado. Dude, this guy was the shit. You'd walk into his office, there'd be 100 people there. He had this crazy Colombian receptionist who fucking was fearless. She would open the drawer and throw your $60 in there. It was a stack, and she'd open the top drawer and show the fucking nine. Like, don't even think about it. She would open the drawer, throw the money, and quickly open the fucking top drawer with the nine sitting there. So I would take her there. I would take her to this Dr. Aslan, who we called the Turkish guy. So we would load up on pills because after my stepfather, unfortunately, committed suicide in the house while she was there. Oh. It was intense. I was kind of taking over his business because he wasn't mobile. He had cancer and he was getting a lot of surgeries. And then he had this really big surgery and they took him off lithium, which he needed to be on lithium because he had a horrific manic depression. And he shot himself. But that night, you read in the story.
Yeah.
That night I went there and she told me he had a heart attack. She didn't really want anybody to go in the house. There's blood on the walls. He had fucking put a gun to his head. I don't know how you got through all that. Right. You're fucking amazing. So I went there and she basically brought me out. She's like, just take these bags and get out of here. And I was like, what? I want to blah, blah, blah. She's like, Michael, get the fuck out of here. So of course I went down to his Lincoln at the time. He had a nice Lincoln.
Oh,
at the
end, Continental. That's
he
right.
figured he was in his 70s or 80s. So now they're not going to fuck with him for flossing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I got really cocky with these fucking triplicates. What I did was I stole a pad of triplicates. Now triplicates are federally dispensed narcotics. That's the high level shit. Oxy, Dilaudid, Percodan, Percocet, the stuff that you just can't fucking get with a regular simple prescription. So I stole these things and I fucking ran around town. I had about 1,200 pills in the trunk of the car. And this was the last place I was going. I was like, fuck, I need to go to the Walmart way out in Duarte. It's late. They're not going to call the doctor at this point. I turn in the prescription. I'm walking around the store and like, Michael Marcus, your prescription's ready. And I walk up and there's three fucking sheriffs there.
Motherfucker.
They take me to jail and I'm like, that's it. I'm never doing this again. I'm never dealing. But the funny thing is when they fucking cuffed me, they took the keys out of my pocket to the rental. Cops are fucking stupid, but you know this. They took the keys out of my pocket that had all the rental information on the tag. I'm like, how'd you get here? I'm like, oh, my sister dropped me
off. No way.
So I get out of jail. She bails me out. I get out of jail. I take a cab to the fucking Walmart. It's like 3 a.m. And the car is in the middle of the parking lot with like lights on it. I'm like, oh, this is a fucking setup. There's no way I'm just going to go drive that car away with 1,100 fucking pills in it. And I creep up to the car and I'm kind of walking around it and looking like, you know, I'm just checking out the fucking empty parking lot. And I get in the car and I fucking drive away and I get home and I'm like, oh, cops are stupid. It was a stroke of bad luck. I just kept dealing.
No way.
Just kept dealing. That was like 2000 or 2000 because Danny killed himself in 2000. So I think it was 2000. It was before 9/11. I remember.
Definitely before 9/11.
Because 9/11 was a crazy day for me. I had to round up as many pills as possible.
Oh, because everybody wanted them?
Everybody wanted them. And I was just concerned that if LA got attacked, I needed to have plenty of inventory.
Yeah.
In case of attack. So, do you remember the first? Well, if you were to tell one story that was like that would, what is the story that you tell? I guess when you go to the meetings, when people sum it up, do they ask you to do that at meetings?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, what's your story?
The war story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, particularly now that I'm so much older and don't look like I did all that, but I did. I did, believe me. Probably what really put me over the edge, I drank for years. I come from an Irish Catholic family surrounded by alcoholism. And I drank.
What's that like? No, just kidding.
Irish people that drink
says the Rhode Islander. Yeah.
Right, so, you know.
I think the whole thing with the drinking.
Actually, the Irish in my family were mostly, the ones that I knew most closely were teetotalers, which was very interesting.
That happens too. There is a percentage of Irish Americans who don't drink.
Yeah. It's very little, but
That's not my family, obviously. You had some. No, it wasn't my family.
No, I got mental patients on all over it, but I'm just saying, in that particular arena, that was it. Yeah.
They're in the mental health arena.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to the alcoholism over there. Okay, I think what really tipped it for me was all that drinking for all those years. When I met Coke, it was on because I could drink without passing out. Mm. I could drink without getting sick. I could go on 3 and 4 day runs. Of course, the end result was horrible. But in the beginning, if you're a real alcoholic and somebody gives you something that keeps you up for days, drinking all you want, that's heaven.
Yeah,
and what's a 3 to 4 day run? Is like you're up for 3 to 4 days.
Drinking, and when you start to pass out, you do another couple of lines.
Yeah.
Horrible to put your body through. Horrible. But when you're in the midst of course, it's paradise. Well, you've done coke. It's paradise.
Yeah, yeah,
it's paradise.
Yeah, right, right.
And then you can
Well, and this is also like, this is the 60s. This is the 70s. This is like
70s, 80s, yeah.
Yeah, yep. I mean, this is great coke times. This is a different period. Like, yeah.
I lived with a coke dealer, so I never had to worry. God, I never had to worry about buying it, worried about where's it going to come from.
And he didn't care about you doing
it. He didn't even know.
He had so much coke, dude.
He had keys. I remember I went there one night and he had just gotten like these three keys. Remember, I don't know if you know this. They used to put stamps of like Reagan. They'd put stamps of Bush just to really piss off the DEA.
Oh, really?
Like they would put like presidential stamps on the kilos. He's like, look, they got this cocksucker Reagan on this one.
No way.
He was so fucking funny,
true.
This guy.
True.
Oh my God, he was. This guy was one of the funniest, craziest.
On the net,
he would say and do anything, whatever, whenever, and whatever he wanted to do or say, he would do it. We'd be at Jerry's, and then the waitress would come up just to take our order. He's like, "You're cute. You like oral or anal?" I'm like straight up. Like I was like, "Danny, chill out." He had these big false teeth, and he would take them out and just wash them and clean them like at a restaurant. He didn't give a fuck.
No way.
He was a badass.
That's was awesome. A badass.
He was a fucking renegade.
No filter. No filter.
He drove around in this brown Cadillac with like fucking ice picks in the door, like in the doors, like rolled up super tight newspapers with fucking 10 rubber bands around. Like he had every idea for a weapon in this car. Usually the gun thing he wasn't big on because I think he didn't want to get a gun charge. But he had as many weapons in this car as he could fucking... Because he grew up in the Bronx and he got his ass kicked constantly for being a Jew in the Bronx. Like, don't even realize how badly Jews were treated in the Bronx because the Irish were after him. The Italians were after him. You know what I mean? So he was a badass. He was a fun dude to be around. He wouldn't make it in this day and age with the whole Me Too thing and all that.
Were you guys living in the Oakwood apartments?
Yeah.
On Barham?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, Todd Bridges was up there then. You remember Todd Bridges?
Yeah, did you smoke coke with him?
I did not smoke coke with him, but he shot his gun in a fucking Porsche driving up and down the hill.
But who's the black guy from that show that the guy that rode the bike?
Sherman Hemsley?
Yeah, Sherman Hemsley.
I smoked coke with him.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And I used to sell pot. I used to sell pot to Garrett. Fuck. Is Sherman Hemsley still alive?
I think he's dead.
Okay. I think he's gone.
Garrett Morris I used to sell pot to, which was a nice... You remember Garrett Morris?
Yeah.
Nicest guy ever, man.
They all lived up there in the Oakwoods?
They all lived up there. Cool and the gang lived up there.
Why? Was it because they were like New Yorkers who just moved to L.A. and they were...
Well, Oakwood had a very network, music, film...
It was always like... But it was also network. Like... Wasn't it kind of like... it was like business... relocation.
It was business relocation. Yeah. It was either people that were definitely going to make it or people that had just given up and like, all right, I'm just going to stay here and fucking get loaded.
Right. But you were selling drugs to most of that complex, weren't you?
Yeah, a lot of people. I would take pills from Danny.
Tell them about when you used to take packages from outside people's doors. Towels, sheets, you
everything. Everything.
Oh, right. The Oakwood has kind of a hotel-y element.
Totally, hotel element. Take packages. I used to drop in from the third floor from the roof, take these sliding glass doors that were fucking, you just take them right out of the fucking track and just walk in and steal shit. There was this huge brother that I stole this coke from and he found out it was me. Do you remember he was walking through the complex screaming my name? Marcus, I'm going to fucking kill you. And he was walking through the complex and he had no idea where I lived. But I was like, oh my God, okay, I'm never stealing from anybody again.
I remember that. Oh, I remember that.
So we should talk a little about my dad, where I came from. My mom, can I tell this story or do you want to tell it?
I just want to say one other thing about Oakwood. It was called Jokewood.
Oakweird. It was, dude, that place was crazy in the 70s and 80s.
Used to be an expression. It's you and me, baby, till the wheels fall off. We drove into Oakwood once, and there was a car up on 4 milk crate boxes with the tires.
Dude, it got a little ghetto. There was this upper, like, parking lot where people that couldn't afford to pay rent anymore were just living in their cars, basically.
No way.
Yeah, dude, it got gnarly up there.
You and me till the wheels fall off, baby.
Keith, I went up there and made amends because I broke into so many cars. so many apartments, stole so much mail. I'd steal mail and have somebody run credit cards. And I went up and I remember I made amends. This was, God, when I first came back to the program. And the manager's like, well, you know, that all happened a long time ago. And I appreciate you coming up here, but we don't know who any of these people are. I was like, well, is there anything I could do to make it right? He's like, yeah, just stay the fuck out of here.
No way.
That's good, dear. That's good.
That's amazing. And, but and how long were you living up there? How long were you in the Oakwood?
A while. 5 years. You met Danny in 77, right?
At least five. Maybe.
They met. Where did you meet Danny, Mom?
At a swing. You know what swingers are.
Yeah.
Probably even you know.
Yeah. You know, he's watched Boogie Nights.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I was at a swing party, and he came in, and yeah, that love at first sight, because he had plenty of drugs with him.
There was a place called the A-Frame in... If you're on Mulholland,
yeah,
and you're on the lookout and you're looking over the Hollywood Bowl, if you look behind you, there's literally a house that's an A-frame.
Yeah,
have you seen that place on the very top?
Probably. I don't know.
You'll see it. That was where you met him, and that was the spot. It was the spot for swing parties. It's where they film most of the pornos.
Oh, yeah. Really?
So Danny had this briefcase he would carry around. Dude, this briefcase was like, it was crazy. There was, again, an ice pick or two. There was always a weapon. Handcuffs. Amyl nitrate, like dildos, quaaludes. Right, Mom? Wasn't there this crazy briefcase he had that he would just carry every night that they went out or went swinging or hanging out? He had his little briefcase. And he kind of looked like a businessman.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't question what this fucking guy had in the briefcase. But there was pot, pills, dildos.
Poppers.
Poppers. Amyl.
Amyl nitrate. Yep.
Yeah.
So he had a whole fucking thing going.
What were you going to say about your dad, Mike?
Oh, my dad. Do you want to tell the story about how you met him?
Sure. When I first graduated from nursing school, myself and another couple of nurses went down to Miami. We were called snowbirds. You left New York in the winter and went down to Miami, and we worked as nurses down there. And there was a fabulous hotel called the Fontainebleau. And in the Fontainebleau was a cocktail lounge called the Boom Boom Room. And I was in the Boom Boom Room one night. And this guy came up and bought me a drink and blah, blah, blah. In the course of the evening, he told me he'd just gotten out of jail.
Prison. Elmira. That's like the difference between dating and marriage. Okay.
So my ears perked up because I'd never met anybody who'd been arrested. I mean, I came from a big alcoholic family, but nobody was ever in jail or prison or whatever. And I thought that was so exciting. And at that time, I didn't drink much at all. The excitement was being with such a bad boy, and boy did, oh, he had just gotten out of prison, and one of the guys in prison, an old guy, told him if he got a pair of vice grips and went to vending machines, you could open the vending machines with vice grips, and all the quarters would come tumbling out. So he and his pal went from New York to Florida. By the time I met him, he had briefcases full of quarters. I remember we went into the Plaza Hotel in Manhattan. God, this is funny. And the bellboy said, what do you got here, bricks? It was amazing. That was an amazing
He was party. With Hal, right? Him right. and Hal did that?
Right.
So they would just go down the Eastern Seaboard and hit every fucking... They had automats all then,
the,
right, Mom?
No, all the rest stops. All rest the stops.
But they had automats, these places where you would buy food that were in vending machines.
Oh, right.
So there was
right.
a ton of vending machines, these automats, and they would crack open every one, leave that city, go to the next city,
yep.
roll up the coins, bring them to the bank... And then hit the vending machines in that city
and
that
start
evening
all over
and
again.
Go all the way down. I think you said they had like 16 or 17 grand by the time
easily,
they got down there.
Easily.
From which New is York, a lot of money in 59, bro.
Yeah.
From New York, right. From New York
That's
to
a hit.
Miami.
Yeah.
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 From
yeah.
New York to Miami.
That's
yeah.
a great hustle.
That's a great hustle. Yeah, man.
Was he a criminal his whole life? Mike's
oh, yeah.
dad?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Very early on.
Definitely.
He went to Elmira when he was 16.
From stealing a guy's stamp book. A kid friend of his had a stamp collection, and some of the stamps were very, very valuable. He stole that, and that's how he wound up in Elmira.
Right.
The family pressed charges,
right.
even though he was young.
Wow. But he was a badass. He learned to box while he was in Elmira, and when he came out, he swore he was never, ever.
Tell the glass story.
When he you read that story in the book.
Yeah.
My dad was really violent, like Joe Pesci violent, like snap and just do really horrific things. So we were in the theater watching Jaws.
of all movies. My dad loved to like just fucking go, you're not going to school today. We're going to the movies or we're going to the beach. So we go, we're living in Banning at the time.
No way.
Dude, he had an auction gallery in Cathedral City.
Okay.
So he was an auctioneer and he would sell all this fake shit and just make tons of money. Like fake Yamagatas. Remember Neiman's? Like yeah. Leroy Neiman's. He would sell all these fake paintings.
No way.
He would sell Rolex watches. The Rolex watch would be real, but he made fake bands.
No
like
way.
Like he chiseled his way just a little off the top. So he picks me up. So he pulls me out of bed. He's like, we're going to fucking blah, blah, blah. We go to Cathedral City. We see Jaws. It just opened. This guy comes down and he's got a flashlight and he's looking for something like a book or his wallet. And he's like in our aisle. And my dad's super impatient. He's like, get that. And he like flashes the light a little at us. He's like, I'm looking for something. My dad's like, we're trying to watch a movie. Don't fuck us around right now, buddy. And I was like, oh no. Because I knew, like I'd get this feeling in my body like, oh, this is going to go horribly wrong. My dad says, don't like watch it with that flashlight. And the guy intentionally like puts it in his eyes. My dad jumps up, grabs him by the fucking collar and pulls him towards him and takes a bite out of his cheek. Like pre-Tyson shit, way pre-Tyson shit. And I'm sitting there and I'm having a flashback of something that happened just 3 months before that. I immediately thought back to this bar. There was a place called the Devil's Triangle in Newport Beach because it was these three bars. And when my dad got divorced from like his third wife, he used to go there and he didn't want to leave me alone. So he would like take me to the bar and just put me in the corner to play like Pong or whatever game was out, Asteroids or whatever. So he's sitting at the bar trying to pick up this girl. And this dude just walks up to him out of nowhere and he's like, what happened to your face? Because my dad had horrible cystic acne, like Bukowski style.
Yeah.
And the dude was like, and my dad was like, hey, buddy, what are you kidding me? I'm just hanging out here. I didn't really hear what he said, but I could tell he was like, step off. And the guy was like questioning him. And the girl said something. He like my dad puts his hand up to the girl's face and like, I got this. Picks up this like heavy glass like this. The ones that used to have like the bubbles on the bottom.
Yeah.
And fucking rams it into this guy's face. It cracks, but he gives it like a turn, which is really intense. Oh. Like that's thinking.
He went to jail. He went to jail
for that one. And I see these things happen. He beat a guy down in Beverly Hills in front of his jewelry store. I'd see these things happen. And years later, I think you know what I'm talking about. Like that trauma lives in your fucking body.
Yeah.
So when you see violent shit or you recall these things, it took a lot of, not just obviously doing the steps, but really like exploring some of the trauma and the shit that I grew up with. Like, I was so exposed to sex and violence at such an early age that it was very dominating. And I understood why I couldn't stay sober for a long time because I didn't go the extra mile. In fact, she told me years ago to go see the woman, Arlene Drake. I was like, she's like, you got to explore the inner child thing and all the damage that happened to that little guy. And I was like, I'm fucking 26. Leave me alone with the inner child. But I went there a couple of years ago after this insane fucking sober companion gig. And I really saw, and I feel weird talking about this, but it did help me. I really saw that I did kind of need to reparent that fucking little dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I had these insane voices. Does anybody else have voices in their head here?
No, nobody.
On some level. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. But those voices were of Karl Marcus, of Danny Fagenbaum, of Sigmund Lichter, who was actually the nicest out of all three. My mom and Sig wrote a book called Man, the Sensual Male, Holloway House, 1970. I found this book on Amazon, and my mom's like, oh, I helped him write that. And she opens it up. She's like, I can't believe I fucking helped him write this. I'll send you a picture of the book.
And wasn't there a follow-up, too?
I don't think there was a follow-up.
Oh.
Oh, wait. Maybe there was something.
No, that was another one.
Oh. That was a different book. Okay. But Sig was really cool. We lived down in Costa Mesa for a while before I lived up in L.A.
I love Costa Mesa.
It was kind of nice. Yeah. We lived on the bluffs and...
Oh, it's great there.
Yeah. There was like, they'd have like acid parties in the backyard and orgies in the house and just everybody drinking vino and playing backgammon. And it was crazy though, because it had that, you'll remember this. He had like Peter Max wallpaper.
Yeah.
And the egg chairs.
Yeah.
The fake bear rug. I mean, it looked like something out of Love American Style. But Sig was probably... I mean, he was a sex maniac and fucking he was insane with that. But he was probably the most understanding
and helpful as far as a father figure went. Definitely. How did you meet Sig, Mom?
Some people introduced me and him. They thought we'd be a good match. It didn't matter that he was married and so was I. That had nothing to, I mean, that's true. They thought we'd be a good match for you. Carol and Hal introduced us.
Hal and Carol, yeah. My dad's crimey, Hal.
Oh.
So my dad used to take us into stores. Like he do you remember Gemco and Fedco?
Yeah.
Of course you do. Gemco and Fedco were the stores of the Costcos of yesteryear, basically. So my dad would buddy up to these managers and break them off some money. And back in the day when you bought big ticket items, they would give you stickers that just said
sold.
Paid or sold.
Sold.
So my dad would come in, would walk in with us and just start putting stickers on shit. And he's like, just meet me in the parking lot. He fucking rolled out a TV on a dolly, a bicycle. I went like, so for me... I was like, oh, this is what you do. You steal. How would I think anything differently?
Yeah.
So he was fucking crazy, man.
Him and Hal did another thing. They used to go in and ask for empty boxes in the supermarket. We're moving. And they'd put the boxes on their shoulder. And then they'd go down the aisle and take cartons of cigarettes and throw them in the boxes. That's when they didn't have cigarettes behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sold cigarettes. That's like an early mob.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel like you got to make your way up into the mob by selling cigarettes. All right, you got to sell cigarettes and break into parking meters.
Yeah, and then you can graduate.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, they did crazy shit. Oh, wait. So you worked at that hospital. Didn't dad come and take all the furniture from the hospital you worked at?
He did that too.
They came in moving clothes.
At 3 o'clock in the morning, he took all the lounge chairs.
They'll decorate our house with it.
No way.
Yes.
Like a couch and tables, lamps. He came in with moving clothes. He actually told me the story. He goes, yeah, we'd come in with moving clothes and say, hey, we're swapping out all this furniture. This is old and we'll be bringing back new furniture. And the waiting room would just be empty.
That's right. Oh, God.
Remember, and you were working at that hospital, right?
I was. They did that at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's what they told the security guard. We do this at night because it doesn't interfere with the patients and the visitors.
Dude, that's amazing.
He had scams, man.
Unbelievable scams.
He didn't do drugs, did he?
He smoked cigarettes and he ended up quitting. He drank a little, but
he smoked a lot of pot when he could get it.
You know that juice you get?
Yeah.
When you do crime, you get that fucking juice.
Those endorphins.
Ripping people off.
Yep, those endorphins.
Yeah. It's a heavy endorphin release when you get away with shit.
I think for me, I love like doing the crime stuff just as much as I love doing drugs and drinking. You know?
Or together.
Oh, together, yeah.
Together.
And I would always be trying to figure out like, you know, like the next like cool. Like I wish there's some stuff I can't, you know, talk about, but it's like just looking back at it, it's insane.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Follow us on Instagram at @itisallbad. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the show and check back soon for another episode. Later.